Hello. This series of discussions is designed to help pastors, church leaders, and ministry volunteers learn how they can train, screen, protect, report, and care. At BCMD, we're committed to helping every church become a safe place for children, youth, and vulnerable adults. More information can be found at the Pathways page on our website at BCMD. To learn more about how you can reduce the risk of sexual abuse within your church. I'm Keith Meyer, pastor, associational missionary, and I get the honor of being the task force chairman for the BCMD Sexual Abuse Task Force. And you are?
I am Chris Buckman, and I am the youth and children's missionary at BCMD, and I also serve on our state task force. Excited today to be talking about PROTECT, as the third word in our paradigm, and talking about policies and procedures that having those in place at your church. And really that first and foremost, those policies and procedures protect the children and the students and the vulnerable adults that we serve, but they also protect those that serve them, your staff, your volunteers, and the church at large.
Mm. Chris, we've talked a lot about the paradigm, the five essentials, over the time that we've been working together, and we've talked about them a lot in meetings, and we've talked about the importance of training. We've talked about how screenings are not as protective as some people think they are, and so it's not the only component that you ought to have. So we're not diminishing any particular component, but we have said multiple times that this particular component is absolutely critical. Why is the behavioral policy component so important?
Well, I think it's one of the most important aspects of a solid protection plan for several reasons. It shows that there is a level of accountability and an enforcement to if policies are broken. It also kind of, if we don't train and we don't screen, if somebody makes it through those processes that wishes to do ill harm, then we have this robust policies and procedures of what you do and what you don't do to stand upon, and then to ultimately have something where we can dismiss somebody if we have to before abuse occurs because policies and procedures have been broken. So they're very effective as a framework, as a backbone for a solid protection kind of process at large, as you would look at the full picture of everything. But they really are kind of the backbone of everything, having solid policies and procedures.
Yeah. If a church is starting from scratch or has old policies, how should they approach this whole process?
Yeah, I work with churches a lot of times. Sometimes I'll ask, I'll say, well, let's take a look at your policies. And sometimes they'll be slightly embarrassed and say, well, let me see if I can find them. And I know, okay, there's going to have to be some work here. But sometimes they don't have any in place. They may have thought of one component of the policy. Maybe they've thought of the bathroom policy. But there's other churches that have some and they haven't been touched or looked at in years and things have changed. And so we're here at BCMD to come alongside and say, if you don't have anything, here's something to get you started. Here's a skeleton of policies and procedures that you can start to build from and build upon for your church. And then if you do have them and they're old and they haven't been looked at or revised or checked upon lately, hey, they can reach out to us and say, can you take a look at these policies and procedures and see what it is that we might be missing or what we might need to update? So there's lots of ways that we can come in and help, no matter what stage of policy, procedure, implementation that you're at your church.
Mm, that's good. You said that there are churches that say, we'll have to find them. We'll have to look for them. I think that there is this mindset that says we have these policies and therefore we're good, right? Or we wrote them at one point, or we hand them out. And really what we've been talking about is the fact that policies need to be living and active, right? Like everybody needs to know them so that they can say, hey, that behavior is not right, or that is right behavior. And the focus and the intent of having this as an active piece of the policy, and the most important piece of the policy, is so that when something wrong is happening in real time, someone will speak up. I'm sure you've heard this in your reading and in the discussions that you've had with people. And, you know, when someone's telling you a story of how something went wrong, you usually hear someone say something like, we had a suspicion, or, you know, people afterwards, after this came out, people said that they knew, or that they had suspicions. And our contention is what is it that sets off the alarm bell when people know? Do they feel free to speak up and to say, something's not right here, something needs to be done? And it's this policies piece that's so critical. It's absolutely essential. So you've got four ways that we can make our policies as effective as they can be. What's the first one?
Well, just as we talked about, the first one is they need to be accessible. It sounds simple, but like I said, many times I found that churches either can't locate them, or they don't have hard copies of them. They can't find them on a computer, or I even ran across one church that just had them actually handwritten. So they didn't have a way to edit them. So the first step was, well, let's type them out and get them on a digital platform so we can make some edits to them. Oftentimes they're found like shoved away in a filing cabinet, but they really need to be accessible to not just a leadership, but to staff and volunteers. They need to know what the policies are. They need to have their eyes go through them. They need to be trained on them, and they need to sign off on them that they have read them, they understand them, and they're going to agree to abide by them. It's really important that our policies are what we do, not what we say that we do. A lot of times you'll see things happening in ministry and you'll be like, well, our bathroom policy is this, but today we're not following it because we're short-staffed, or whatever the reason is. Or when you go back and actually look at what it says they do, they're not doing that in person. So they really need to match up with what we do, not just what we say that we do.
When we say that they should be accessible, would this include putting them on a website, or if you have a church app, should you include your policies there?
I personally think it's a great idea. It's wonderful that people can actually go back and refer to them, and they can easily find them and put their hands on them, not just for people serving kids and youth in the church, but the congregation at large. Also, people peruse websites all the time looking for new churches. That's the front door to your church now. And if your children's policies are listed on there, they can take a look at, see what you have written out and determine, is this a safe place for my child to go? Do they have safe people there that I can trust to leave my child with? So yeah. It's a big nod toward transparency, I think.
Yeah. I think too, you know, we were just talking about this idea of when does the alarm bell go off? And if it's posted on your website and accessible, say through phone, and something is happening, or there's an incident, or there's a question, right? Which is more likely to happen? That somebody's going to take out their phone and go and navigate quickly to review the policy, or that they're going to say, okay, I'm going to go home, right? I'm going to go get out my paper copy of this policy. Like by then you've left church, right? You're thinking about what football game's on, you know, are they going to show Taylor Swift today? Right. You know, it's gone. And what we want is real time response. We want people to be ready to answer. So accessibility. Yeah. I think this is, it's a great observation. What's the second one?
Well, policies and procedures need to be tailored to your specific church. Church policies will differentiate greatly based on your building layout, your church hierarchy, volunteer requirements, the ministries that you offer, the ages that you serve. So it's acceptable to start out with a basic framework from which to build, But as you begin to compile that and build that policy, it's going to end up looking very different from the church next door. And it should be, because it's going to be tailored to your specific church and to your specific ministries that you have. If you don't have a van ministry, then you don't need a van policy. Like if you're not picking up kids in the neighborhood, you know, you don't need that policy. And it's important to just kind of think through your building and how it's laid out. Do you need different policies on different bathrooms? If kids use bathrooms that are not designated for only kids, you may have a different policy for that bathroom. So it really needs to be tailored to your churches. But then again, churches also don't need to reinvent the wheel or start from scratch. But they do need to be highly, highly tailored to your church. And if you have a mentoring program, then you'll need some policies for that program. But another church down the street may not have it, so they don't need those. So it's not like you can just pick up a policy and say, slap your name and your church name and your logo on it and say, these are our policies. We're adopting these policies, because they really need to be highly individualized, tailored to your church.
Yeah, I feel like as well that part of coming to a consensus and making sensible policies is having a discussion or a comparison policy to policy. Like, this church has this practice, this church has that practice. Is this one better than that one? Which one makes more sense? What do we agree on? Smart. I think so. What we're saying is a church can't just download a policy off a website and say, this is our policy. But they can grab policies and use them as a template or a base to develop their own and to work through it. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, I think if you download a policy from another church and as you read through it, you may say, hey, we didn't think about that. This is great. We need to institute this in our church. So I think that can be very helpful. Another way that churches can help other churches.
That's great. What's your third way?
Well, really, policies are kind of need to be bookended by training. So it's really important to have training, and kind of the way that our five-word paradigm sits is kind of an order process. You train people first and foremost on what the actual risk is and let people know right away from the beginning, this is the risk to our church, these types of predators, this type of grooming behavior. And so then as they move through your paradigm, when they get to the policies, they have a very clear understanding of the why behind the what. And so they're much more apt to read your policies and go, oh, I know why we have that policy, because of this is what I learned in training. And they're also much more apt to follow that and hold other staff and leadership to accountability to follow those policies. So the pre-training before policies is huge. But then afterwards, the training on the policies, just going through before you have big events, Vacation Bible School, just bringing them out and say, hey, let's just quick refresh over the policies in case anyone needs a reminder. So they really need to be bookended by training before and training after. You can use it as part of your onboarding process and the interview screening process, where you take a look at those policies and procedures together with somebody. But they really need to be bookended by trainings. It's imperative. You can't just throw a policy. Nobody likes to have a book of rules thrown at them. And more than likely, if they don't have training before that, they're not going to read it. They're going to sign the last page and shove them in a file somewhere or throw them in the trash, because no one likes to read, you know, a book of rules of what they can and can't do. But if they've been trained before to know this is what we're dealing with, and this is who and what we're trying to protect, and this is how we're going to protect them, then they're much more vested in that.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's a great observation, what you said, because we talk about the five essentials as a paradigm, right? Like, these are five things that you need to have, but they also are a journey, right? You know, and so like you said, you're training someone, you're screening your folks, and then you enter into, when you're in the ministry environment, you're entering into a place where these policies that you've been trained on and these behaviors that you've learned and these red flags to look out for, all of that is active here in this ministry environment. So it's, yeah, it is there is a flow there too that makes it a journey. I think that's brilliant. It that increases the importance of doing things in order, I think, and being orderly. So, and actually doing the hard work of thinking through and developing those policies. What's the fourth reason, or practice regarding policies?
So a lot of times once we get our policies and procedures written, we never really take time to review them every year. So I recommend to churches that every year they have a team of people that sit down, take an hour and review the policies, make sure that you haven't added a ministry throughout the year that you need to write some policies for, make sure maybe you got rid of a ministry that you no longer need that policy for. Maybe you did buy a church van, so now you need some policies in place, or maybe the hierarchy of how you report incidents or who reports to whom has changed, the leadership has changed, and so you'll need to review that. Maybe your insurance carrier's phone number has changed, or the number to report has changed. So there's always, it's always a great idea to sit down at the end or the beginning of the year and just have, you know, a couple eyes look it over and say, does everything still sit well? Is this still how we're operating in ministry? And if it's not, then you need to adjust it so that it does reflect that.
I would think that it'd be helpful too. It's not just internal developments that happen, right? You know, there are external things like, it doesn't feel like a new technology, right? But Snapchat is certainly something. It's a way in which kids communicate. But how many people have got a specific policy on whether or not youth pastors or staff members should be actively using Snapchat with people in the church, right? And yet these are the ways in which people get in trouble. So as you learn about things, hear about incidents at churches or learn about new trends, right? They should be included in your policy as well. And so that's why you can't just stick it in a filing cabinet and say, we've got this, we're good. I've heard, and tell me if you've heard this as well, that having policy and not following it is actually just as bad as not having a policy at all.
Yeah, and we've even heard of churches who certain people have to follow the policy and certain other people don't.
Wow.
It's really imperative that the policies are followed by everybody, the pastor, the pastor's wife, no matter who they are, no matter how high in leadership they are, they need to follow the policies. Everything applies to everyone.
Wow. Yeah, important. Do you have any other advice for us on developing policy?
I think a lot of times churches don't understand too that it's a good idea to write policies based on what we know about the grooming patterns of preferential offenders. And what I mean by that is one of the ways that we know people groom children is they will start to separate them and they will do several things. There's a lot of research on this. They will start to give them extra attention. They'll start to give them personal gifts, or they'll start to see how far they can get with inappropriate touch, tickling, sitting on their laps, how far they can get with conversations that kind of go just over the edge of being inappropriate. So if we write policies based on what we know about that, we have a policy. You are not allowed to give individual gifts to kids. You may give a classroom, everyone a gift, but not individual gifts. You may no longer, this is inappropriate touch and this is inappropriate touch. So if you write policies based on what we know about those things, when somebody is seen breaking the policy, they can be dismissed from ministry, hopefully before we can stop them in that grooming process before abuse actually occurs. So that's a big piece too, that if you don't have that training component, you wouldn't know to implement those kinds of policies and why those policies are important. So it goes to speak again about the very foundation of training.
Yeah, that's good. I feel like we're having a policy in place, right? The individuals, all we believe every individual is important. And we want every individual in the church to be protected. We want them to develop. But individuality, in a way, is a liability for a church. If somebody says, hey, I I don't need to follow this policy because I know better, or I can be, what are the terms that we've applied to folks who are grooming, that they can be helpful, trustworthy, good, useful, right? Like, I'm so good, I'm so useful that I don't need to follow these rules. That's the danger zone. Mm-hmm. I'm allowed to touch in a way that others aren't, or I'm allowed to give gifts and others aren't because I'm special. That's dangerous. And it takes some humility to say, I'm going to operate by the rules. So excellent, I think, insights on policy there. Well, at BCMD, as we said earlier, we're here to help you with any and all of these protective questions you may ask for help, and we may say, we don't know. We're gonna look into that, and we actually will if we say that we're going to. We have these discussions frequently, and we're trying to use the best information that we've got and use our wisdom to help our churches become the safest places that they can possibly be. If any of these measures or things that we're discussing are new to your church, feel free to reach out to either one of us. Again, visit our Pathways page. There's loads of information and resources there. And go there to learn more about the whole protective essential paradigm that we've developed that can help you learn how to train, screen, protect, report, and care. We'll be back next time to talk about reporting. Is that right, Chris?
Yes.
I thought we were doing reporting today, but we were doing protect today. And until then, I'm Keith Meyer.
And I'm Chris Buckman.
We'll talk to you soon. God bless.